Welcome back to Being Curious with Nomi. We are a team of coaches and counselors, but we're also humans, which is why we love talking about self-awareness, what sparks our curiosity, and conversations that help both us and our clients grow. Part of growing is embracing new perspectives, which is why each episode might look a little different, but they all share the common thread of curiosity. I'm Madeline, a certified professional coach, and I'll let my lovely co-hosts introduce themselves.
I'm Ellen. I'm also a coach.
I'm Maggie. I'm a coach at Nomi.
And I'm Cynthia. I'm a licensed mental health counselor and a life coach.
In today's episode, we have an actual real challenge from one of our listeners. This is an adult conversation had among adults, so please be aware that this might not be appropriate for all ears. I'd also love to give a heads up that this soundbite has been run through a voice-changing software to protect the privacy of our listener, but it is a real clip. She's been extremely vulnerable and generous in sharing her challenge with us today, and we wanted to make sure to respect her privacy. So let's kick off by listening to the challenge at hand, and we will invite you to be curious alongside us.
I've been married almost 20 years to a good man, but there is little to no sex, and that has been going on for probably 10 years, where every few months I would have to bring it up, and then, or I'd always have to initiate. It feels in the last 2 or 3 years, it has gotten even worse, where there just really is no effort. I do feel loved and supported by him in other ways, but I certainly end up feeling resentful and lonely from time to time about the topic. I do talk to him about it from time to time, but feel like I'm starting to give up bringing it up with him because it feels to me where there's a will, there's a way. And if there's just no will on his part, I can't make it be there. He did a few years ago go to the doctor and get a pill. And I think he tried that once, but his lack of effort to try to please me or try to correct this issue for him and I is it feels like over time, I'm not sure where it'll end up our relationship. I've been able to not make it such a top priority in my day-to-day, but every few months, it feels like I get upset and talk to him about it, and we have the same conversations. I'm starting to feel like years later, there's just no point in me bringing it up because it doesn't change anything. I do realize that this can be a natural part of relationships, but I also worry where it leaves us at some point.
So first off, thank you to our lovely listener for giving us this wonderful voice note that we can dive into. There are so many different ways to go with this, just like in even a coaching session. There are so many different questions that can lead you down a million different paths. But let's start somewhere. So what topic do we want to start with that came up for any of us in listening to this voice note?
So one of the things that came up for me was this concept about where there's a will, there's a way. And I have this conversation a lot with couples and also in my own relationships, is that what's the definition of willingness versus capability?
Are you pop quizzing us?
No, I'm not pop quizzing you, but I'm thinking that's a really juicy question.
Totally. Yeah.
So capability and willingness, because I think we actually have to define it at some point. Yeah. But willingness is, you know, does someone want to do something? And capability being, is someone able to do something? Mm-hmm. And this, I think, comes up a lot around not just conversations in couples, but conversations in needs. Mm-hmm. I remember a huge pivot conversation I had with a client around there being a difference between going to their partner and saying, I need you to blank, right? I need you to do this, this, and this, or I need you to do this for me, versus I need, and then recruiting resources. Because a lot of times we communicate our needs as demands rather than as needs, and then ask our partners if they're willing to be a resource that would contribute to the fulfillment of that need. And by doing that, we can open the conversation about capability and willingness, because a lot of times, even my husband will turn around and be like, I hear you on the need, but I'm not in a position that I am able, capability, to help fulfill that need. And then it's my responsibility to go fulfill that need somewhere.
Right.
But then there's this frustration piece, right, that can come out when you're expressing a need and the person is making the choice to be unwilling, is capable. I'm capable of doing it. I'm just choosing not to. And when you are having repetitive conversations about an unmet need and there's capability but not willingness, I think you kind of run into frustration of, what does that mean? You know, what does it mean that you're capable but unwilling, and how do we work through that?
Ooh, I have a question, Ellen. And yes. I don't know if you exactly were saying this, but I'm like, who determines capability? Who gets to decide if I'm capable of something or not?
Great question.
I don't know.
Yeah. Right.
Maggie, I was literally about to ask, but is he capable, right? Physically capable and emotionally capable are two different things.
Right.
Who gets to make that final call?
And then we get into another juicy topic, which I was like, oh my gosh, we could dive into this, which is this whole thing that we talk about language, right? I believe that capability equals this, but you believe, or your definition of capability looks like this. And there's enough nuance in the two definitions, that's where we're falling down, is I'm looking at you and you're telling me you're just not willing, but what you're really telling me is you're not capable.
I like that you brought up language too, because another theme that I heard, there was a couple mentioned of like expectations. Mm. And what was coming up to me is just how often we think that our expectations are like clear, or we are guessing, we are assuming people's expectations of what they expect from us, and like we're completely off base. It shows up in every arena all the time. Like I've done a lot of things that I thought people expected of me and completely missed the mark. But it's because there was no transparent conversation about what those expectations actually were.
But one of the tricky things here as well, one of the things that I thought about while I was listening to her, is when we are more aware than our partner is, especially when we're also, I mean, bringing in this capability thing again, is even if he turns around and he's going to the doctor and he's saying he wants to do the things, he might not be aware it's a capability issue for him. He might not be aware of why he's not doing things. And then when he's not showing up or initiating sex, it hurts him even more, because he knows he should, or said he would and committed to it and isn't, and feeling worse about himself as well. So now nobody's happy at all. One of the questions I have, even around what you're talking about, Maggie, is with expectations, we have to be aware of our own expectations, never mind be able to communicate them. And there's often an imbalance when we're talking about something with another person, where one person has thought about it a lot more, especially if it's more important to them. And the other person is maybe even avoiding it because it's a painful topic. And so there's an imbalance of awareness around it, which makes it really hard to come to the table to evenly communicate expectations and needs.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It really does. I hadn't thought about that angle, Madeline. That's a good one. And then if you're the, you know, the party who's initiating the conversations, do you even realize that your partner or whoever you're talking to is aware or not aware of their own sense of capability and willingness? And then how do you spark that conversation? So we need an up spiral somehow instead of a down spiral.
Madeline, can I put you on the spot?
Yeah.
So self-awareness, right? Mm-hmm. And expectations. What would you, so it doesn't have to be the specific topic, right? But what is a good way that you would help somebody gain some self-awareness over what some expectations that they have might be?
I'm very glad that you specifically put me on the spot, Maggie, because it was a video you created the other day that I would actually recommend to people, which is, I mean, you communicated it as being an empath, and when you tell people how they feel versus like how you articulate that. And so in your context, Maggie, it was, you know, have you ever said to a friend like, oh, I think you're feeling angry, and they react and they're like, no, I'm not. And how to actually have communication that helps people raise awareness without telling them how they are. And I think this is essentially the same question, which is rather than saying, you never want to have sex with me, we talk about this all the time, you don't care. Right? You don't care about this, right? That's telling someone how they feel or what's going on in their head, which of course is going to trigger defensiveness, because awareness or not, that's probably not what's going on. And if anything, obviously, I don't think this person's having that conversation with her husband, because she says he's a very loving and supportive person. And that's honestly where the cognitive dissonance comes from as well, because it's like, if he's so loving and caring, why is he not loving and caring about this? So I think this is when we build awareness, we can just observe. It's called naming it and coaching, and these detached observations of husband, dear husband, I'm noticing that every time we have this conversation, it doesn't go anywhere. So what's going on with you between our conversations? And he might say, I don't know. And then you go, okay, well, what do you want? Right? What does a fulfilling sex life look like to you? Okay. And then you get a little more curious. And you know, in the beginning, like with any client, in any coaching conversation, which is what this essentially is, you get I don't know walls. You get they haven't thought that deeply, right? Mm-hmm. And so I actually am going to kick the ball over to Cynthia, who taught me in my earliest coaching days the best ways to work with the I don't know wall. So what are some of the ways to work with the I don't know wall?
I'm so good at the I don't know wall. So this is going to be good. Fill us in.
Yeah. So the I don't know wall, I usually just remain curious as long as possible, which is, and I'm going to say, easy for me when I have my counseling or my coaching hat on. But it, and this is why sometimes coaching and counseling can be really helpful, because it's easy for us when we don't have a stake in the game. Is it easy for me to stay curious when I have a stake in the game, when I'm really feeling vulnerable, when I'm feeling like I'm not getting the care and custody that I need? Absolutely not. It's not easy at all. So I'm speaking to all of you from my, with my counseling hat on, and empathizing with my person hat, my human hat on. So I'll talk about, well, how do you know? So what are some examples of things in your life that you didn't know that you then knew? And we usually go to a doing activity. Like when you didn't know how to ride a bike, how did you know? What things did you discover that you didn't want to know, and why didn't you want to know them? What were the things that maybe frightened you? So we try to help them learn how to move from I don't know to I know, because they've done it in other aspects of their life. And usually the I don't know is a stall tactic, because sometimes they just need time, but they don't know how to articulate that. They don't have the self-awareness that I just need time. I'm a shoot from the hip lady, and I go from I don't know to know really rapidly. But I'm married to someone who's a processor, and so he goes from I don't know to I know by synthesizing, gathering new information, taking a little more time, and sometimes that's where we really fall down. So I just needed to have the understanding that his I don't know really translates to I just need more time.
I need to take a step back and then, you know, give me 24 hours and like a little journaling, and then all of a sudden I will know. But it can get like really in conversations, like I found myself really frustrated, or not like shutting down, but like I get a little edgy when someone's sitting across from me asking, and I'm like, I don't know. It creates a little dis-ease. And I have to step back and digest that, like you said. So in relationships, like understanding how each other process, right, and move through things is really helpful.
To get specific in the context of sex again, I'm going to bring in Esther Perel, who is a very wonderful human being. She is couples therapist and a sex therapist, and she's a researcher, and she's been around for ages. She has a wonderful TED Talk I would recommend a lot of people listen to, because one of the other things about knowing is that sometimes as well, we're so fixated in our own experience that we forget that there are human patterns that go beyond us, and that there's so much information out there that we don't have to learn the hard way, because some psychologist has already figured it out, and we just need to see if it resonates.
So exciting when you find it.
Exactly. And so about this issue, but also beyond, she talks about pleasure, and she talks about desire, and she talks a lot about the difference between, she calls it the erotic and the domestic, or freedom and stability, or these two opposing forces that come into play with long-term relationships. And she says, to experience pleasure and connection, one needs to have a basic sense of self-worth, meaning I am lovable, and a basic sense of sexual self-esteem, I am desirable, and then therefore an ability to communicate with others about their wishes and the life that they want for themselves. And this creates a healthy sense of entitlement. And so I think what's really difficult when we're talking about sex is it's not about the sex. That's the problem, is that it's got nothing to do with the sex, which is why we're talking about these larger concepts here. And it seems like we might have floated off topic, but that's because we can see it since we've had these conversations with people before. But it's usually not about the thing. And whether it's sex or anything, there's a wonderful video out there called It's Not About the Nail. I don't know. Have any of you seen It's Not About the Nail?
Oh my God.
or like this, the
nail. It's a video of a woman and she's got a nail hammered into her skull and she's going on and on and on.
I did see that.
My empath self is already, like there's a nail and skin. Like I would not even
There's got to be blood.
No, I haven't seen it for a while, but you explain it, Madeline.
Yeah. Obviously. So there's a nail that's hammered into this woman's head and she's sitting across on the couch with her husband and she's talking about like all these problems she has and her husband's just looking at her forehead and he's like, what? And she's like, and I don't understand why I'm like hurting this much and blah, 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 blah. And he's literally looking at the nail in her forehead. Yeah. And he's like, haven't you seen, isn't there a nail right there? And she just goes, God, it's not about the nail. And so it's just this thing about the surface problem is very rarely what the actual thing is. This is why in coaching 101, they teach you do not coach the topic. Because if you coach the topic, you're not going to build up the person. And the same is true in these relationships is if you only ever focus in those conversations on the fact you're not having sex, instead of focusing on what's really going on for the two of you, then you're never going to actually get past it unless some sort of, a miracle could happen, something could shift, and then that could change it. But the decade, which sounds so painful, by the way, to go through a decade of the same conversation is likely because there's something else going on under the surface.
Right. And the trick really is for the two of them to find a way as to what is beneath the surface. Mm.
Yeah.
So how can we provide tools as coaches or therapists, right, to enter the conversation differently the next time? You know, is it, let's talk about what intimacy means to me and you talk about it in terms of what it means to you and Maggie for the processors like you and I, maybe don't take him by surprise, right? Like, let's make a date to have this conversation and we're going to start a conversation.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about, you know, I want to share with you why this is so important to me. And I want to hear from you how it could be important to you. What needs would intimacy meet for you? Because I'm going to talk about what they'll mean for me. Mm-hmm. And let's see what we discover. We could have some fun with this discovery. Like, let's be free and easy with our conversations. And that in and of itself could be a real intimacy starter too. Of, you know, you're bearing your soul. That's intimacy. And I, you know, maybe that's a way of pivoting.
I can already hear Cynthia like in my head. I think, Ellen, you're describing like just some nice data collection, like do some little data collection, right?
Curious.
Right. But it's true because then you know what you're working with. And that's what Madeline was saying. The presenting symptom, right? We can see it, but there's often like these little underlying causes. And sometimes we just need to get our eyes on that.
Yeah. And think about the richness of that conversation, not just in how they might hopefully both leave it feeling a greater sense of connection and intimacy, but rich topic for future conversation, whether it's let's next talk about where we're aligned, because we discovered that there are a few things about intimacy that we share in common. And let's talk about the places where maybe we're not so aligned. And is there something to talk about there?
And also, I think what you're bringing up is brilliant things, right?
Well, I think
really great ideas. And what I always ask myself is, what do I want to bring to the conversation? Because what I heard in this clip was that she is coming to this conversation beaten down, lonely, resentful. I don't know about you guys, but when I'm coming from a place of loneliness, resentment, sadness, no matter how hard I try, it comes through. That energy is in the room. And if I'm like lobbing my curious question with all of that other stuff attached to it, it usually doesn't land as well as, and I was thinking about you, Maggie, because I know you love playfulness and fun, right? And a combination of what you were saying, Ellen, is can I bring my curiosity, but can I come from a place of empowerment? A place of feeling good, not waiting until I'm on my last leg, about to throw in the towel. And then a year has passed and here I go. I'm like, this is my last ditch effort. Can I just have fun with it? Can I have fun with it? Can I be playful? Can I come from a place, if we just talked about it yesterday, from that despair, but I got a little pep in my step today. Let's talk about it again today. with mm-hmm. playfulness.
Mm-hmm. Another reality that I would love to just speak about here, and I can speak about it from my personal experience as well, is Ellen, you said, don't surprise him. Mom, you said, what do I want to bring? Both of these things brought the same thing to my brain, which is that you're both individuals. And there's a certain amount of individual ownership and sorting through your own individual stuff that has to happen before you can really have a productive conversation together. Because what happens when one of us is really aware and the other one is not, or one of us has spent a lot of time thinking about this and the other one really isn't, one person is showing up with like almost 80, 90% awareness and the other person showing up with 40. And how far can you get in a conversation with that much imbalance? What ends up happening is the person who showed up with 90 often takes on the role of getting the other person up to speed. So the conversation isn't about your relationship. It's always going to be about the other person and getting them up to speed. And sometimes we want to get them up to speed by force. So we tell them what they are, or we tell them what's going on. But that's not the work that needs to be done. That person needs to at least be at 60, because there might be a gap between the two of you, but 40, 80 is a huge gap. Like, there needs to be a little bit less space. And you can also be at 40 together and grow in awareness together. And to me, why I bring this up is I have this conversation with my husband, is I think about our relationship and I think about myself a lot. And he is a processor. He's a slower processor. So in general, even though he does spend a lot of time, he just closes the ring on an aha moment a little bit slower than me, lovingly. But he does really care. And so we have to have conversations sometimes where I say, when the two of us show up to a conversation that the two of us have set in place, no one's surprised, but I've done the work for myself to show up with my own awareness and you haven't, it hurts me and it hurts our relationship. And so the reality of this is that you might not be the person that can figure out some of the missing pieces here. It might be that your husband has to go and find that on his own with his own thought partner, which is super scary when we're talking about something like sex, because it's awkward and taboo. And if you don't have a therapist for regular life, like, why would you all of a sudden be comfortable with a sex therapist? Like, that's so extreme, especially in our world. But this is part of the challenge, is that we each have to do our own work. And part of the conversation is potentially not having it with each other, but agreeing that you're going to have it in places where you can grow as individuals first.
100%. And that might be a safer place for him to start in terms of figuring out things on his own, so that he goes into a conversation, right? So partner goes into a conversation with a lot more confidence that I've put in the time, I've put in the thought, and now I have something to say.
Yes. Oh my God, yes. Ellen, yes. Because that's the other thing, is if you're even in, especially in this topic, oh my God, I feel so jazzed right now, especially in this topic, like, if you can just imagine if I was struggling with this topic and then I went in, I was already vulnerable because this is a vulnerable topic in general. Yeah. And then on top of that, I was extra vulnerable because I was sitting across from someone that I admire, love, and respect. And I was hearing this person tell me that I wasn't loving them properly. Oh my God, vulnerability again. And then I'm hearing them tell me things about myself that I don't know. Oh my God, would I be drowning in self-doubt?
Completely. Mm-hmm. Personally, I would shut down.
Yep.
I wouldn't, I would have, the hamster wheel going in my head a million miles an hour. And I'm not sure I would be able to even participate in the conversation in a way that I would want to with the person I love, admire, and respect. Mm-hmm. So, I agree. It would be really hard.
Yeah. I love that you guys are bringing up, just breaking down, thinking about how you want to show up in a conversation. Because whether or not we like it, we can think mentally, I'm going into this calm, cool, and collective. But our nervous systems are like radiating this whole opposite story. And because we're wacky animals, the person you're sitting across from, we all start to match, right? Like this mirror, we start to match the temperature of the room. So I love what you're both saying about maybe it is taking a little separate adventure and then coming back together where it is brought down a notch, brought down a level. So things aren't unintentionally, right? Mm-hmm. Biologically, the stakes are getting upped.
Yeah. Right. Then my question to you all now is, what does she do in the meantime? Because she's there, right? She's thought about this. She's, maybe there's always more data to collect, more work to be done. And at the end, we can leave her with some questions to reflect on. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, while she's waiting for him to catch up, what does she do?
She invites him along her journey of self-awareness, but not on this topic. She said that he's a good man, right? So she's got a definition in her head of what makes him a good man for her. That's where she starts sharing those things. It's called the Oreo technique. I share it a lot with parents. Sometimes we do need to deliver a kind of uncomfortable or challenging message, but I'm like, sandwich it between two good things, right? Mm-hmm. I know in my relationships, if I've built the cushion for them to fall on, that the conversations aren't as difficult, meaning that I would say, you know what, I just want to share with you, because I don't think I do this, of why I think you're such a good man. Do you mm-hmm. see those in yourself? That we get back to language again. Wouldn't it be interesting if you're like, oh, I thought it was these other things, and you can go, oh, well, I'm going to add those to my bucket too. We can share what we're learning about ourselves, but also the story we're telling ourselves, especially in a positive way, in a strength way, of what we think makes someone a good man or a loving person or whatever we're defining it as. We've already defined it, so just share.
And I think, you know, you were getting a little bit, Cynthia, curiosity. And if she can try to remain openly curious, I think you nailed it when, you know, you talked about the sandwich, right? These are, you know, two reasons that I think you're such a good man. And he may say, oh, that's so interesting. I didn't see it that way. And if she can remain curious and continue to engage in that dialogue, why don't you see it that way? Or what do you see as, you know, your attributes? Because I think you have so many. I just named two, but I'd be curious about your thoughts. So remain curious and open.
I am piggybacking right with both of you. I think for me, the two things I heard were like this resentfulness and this loneliness. Those are heavy things that once we have them running through our system, right, they're hard to flip a switch and put down. So I would encourage this person, like resentfulness, we start then negativity bias, right? We start looking and finding all of the things to just add to the resentful pile. So almost exactly what you two are saying. Maybe just being mindful of, ooh, there's that like resentful feeling again. Mm-hmm. I noticed it. It's popping up. Maybe I'm fact checking in that situation. Is there something that just happened that is actually, it was good or it was helpful or it made me feel connected? Mm-hmm. Just to like tip the scales maybe mm-hmm. back towards a little bit more balance.
How about you, Madeline?
I have a very practical tip, which is, it might be worth having a conversation with each other around detaching sex from desire. I think sometimes we get really hung up in the idea that the only way that you can show you desire your partner is for it to do something that will inevitably lead to sex. Mm-hmm. And so it creates a vicious cycle where we end up not doing anything ever because of the entitlement that it feels like it comes with. And so I think that having an open and honest conversation around what makes you each feel desire, and that has nothing to do with sex, and giving each other permission that it doesn't have to end up in sex for the time being, especially while you're both doing your self-exploration, would be really important. Because I think if I were in his position, and I've been in hers, so if I was in his position and I knew how important this was to my partner that I loved and I cared about and I did desire, but for some dang reason I couldn't figure out, I couldn't get myself to do this, and I have all sorts of beliefs about what that means about me as a man and a person and whatever, I would feel like anytime I even got remotely within the ether or universe of that, I would potentially be in a dangerous zone where I'd have to end up doing something I didn't feel like I could do right now, which would just crush me further. And I'm feeling quite fragile about it, but I'm not willing to reconcile that with myself right now. Mm-hmm. So if I knew that my wife had given me permission to compliment her, to give her a kiss, to hug extra long, to give me just a whole bunch of options that I knew she knew wouldn't lead to sex, but would make her, give her signals that I desire her, even if I'm not ready for the rest of the stuff right now, it would give me an opening. It gives me a foot in the door to figure out how to restore something rather than it being this sex or no sex, black or white, on or off switch. So detaching desire from sex and communicating what makes you feel desired and giving that permission that sex is not, maybe it's even off limits right now, can help create some progress in the direction you want it to go.
Yeah, because it's a step forward as opposed to a stalemate.
Exactly. Yeah. Great phrasing, Ellen.
Even a tiny little step forward.
Yeah. One bite at a time, right? When we build building blocks, because that may also for her give her the ability to turn the volume down on that, those resentment and loneliness feelings.
That's right. Yes.
I was scandalously raising my eyebrows at you, Mom, when you were like, one bite at a time. I was like,
I caught it. I caught it.
One eyebrow up.
Pun intended.
Pun intended.
All right. So at the end of the day, we are coaches in the room. And one of the core components of coaching is asking powerful questions. So I would love to just kind of put some questions out there. And this can be for anyone who's struggling with something similar in their lives, and especially for our listener. You might want to send this to yourself, answers in a voice message. It might be that you journal, but these are some things that we thought about that you might want to think about too.
Well, you read an Esther Perel quote earlier on that I really liked, and I want to steal a piece of it, which is, what are your wishes, hopes, and longings?
How do you envision your ideal relationship in terms of emotional and physical intimacy?
What can you do for yourself to make yourself feel loved today? How can you show yourself some love?
Mine is, what would a wildly erotic life look like for you? And I have
and
so
how
many
are
more.
You gonna get it?
Yeah, and how are you gonna get it? I have so many more questions, and I'm just gonna throw out some more from Esther Perel from her speech. I just turned them into questions, which is, how does loving look different from desiring? Mm. When do you find yourself most drawn to your partner? And how do you love in a way that prevents you from making love with your partner? Meaning, how is the stuff you're doing, how is the way he's loving and supporting you and you're loving and supporting him potentially actually making it harder to stay in that space of desire? And if you want some of the answers of her studies when she asked these questions to other people, I would really recommend watching any of her speeches or her TED Talk. And I believe she also has a book called Mating in Captivity that is about this tension.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she also has like a new card deck game out.
Or oh, she does. Too, that I, like, she Ooh, does.
Nice. Yeah.
She's fantastic. Mom, do you mind if I actually steal the show about the quote this time?
I do not mind at all.
I am going to read the quote that we actually missed out on from Esther Perel, who says, sexuality or working on sex isn't about getting people to have more sex. It's looking at things as a lens through which we can see our most entrenched beliefs, values, and attitudes, and also our more acute wishes, hopes, and longings for something better. And I think this is it. Ultimately, when we're in relationship, I can hear how much she loves this man, and I can hear how much he loves her through the way she talks about it. That love is really there. And the reality is that it's work. These things are work. Long-term relationships are work. And why I love Esther Perel so much is she talks about this wonderful human quality in modern history, where we no longer need sex and children for labor or sex just to get us children. We are the only species on Earth who thinks of eroticism and the concept of pleasure for pleasure's sake. So choosing to see this as an opportunity and an investment in each other and in each other's joy, happiness, and pleasure is a really fun way of looking at things, I think.
Absolutely.
100%.
So if you have a challenge that you'd like for us to discuss in a similar way, please do get in touch. You can email us at podcast@nomi.com, or you can find the link in the show notes. We are on every 2 weeks, so we will see you in just a couple of weeks. Until next time.
Be well.
Thanks for listening to Being Curious with Nomi. Did you learn something new or feel inspired by something in this episode? Then please pass it along.
Sharing our podcast is the best way you can help us inspire more self-awareness and curiosity in the world. And if you're curious about how we can support you, head to nomi.com to see how we work together one-to-one.
We know it takes a village, and we're grateful you're part of ours. This is Cynthia,
Maggie,
Ellen,
and Madeline
asking you to be good to you.